Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Joining me, as always, is Griffin Schiller, and today's very special guest is John Flickinger. John, how are you doing?
Hey there, guys. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. We're home right now. This is the best we can do, so I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited. I'm happy that you invited me, man. I don't have any friends, so this makes up for that.
Well, none of us have any friends right now since we can't leave our houses, so this is the way we get to talk movies with people is over webcams. Did you say that you didn't sleep last night?
Yeah, sometimes, here's my motto. If I know I have to do something the next morning, I'm like, don't go to sleep because you will not get out of your bed. So it's best just to skip sleep sometimes. And this morning I had to wake up and beat the unwashed masses into Walmart at 7 o'clock this morning. Long story short, I'm trying to put together a home mini gym on a budget. And I had to go buy some weights, the essentials to leave the house.
Did you try grab any toilet paper while you were there to be safe?
You know what? I don't need toilet paper. I just need dumbbells.
True. Gotcha.
Yeah. I'll make it. I don't need the toilet paper.
I mean, honestly, that was like the first thing that went through my mind when this whole thing happened was how the hell am I going to get to the gym? Thankfully, my girlfriend's dad has a home gym, like a full home gym. So nice. I've been very fortunate in that regard. Yeah.
I'm building one right now. I have a small apartment, but I'm doing a makeshift gym on a budget. So we'll see how it goes. By the way, Jim, the crazy thing is, I know this is a movie podcast, but like even dumbbells and gym equipment is sold out because everyone's stuck at home. They bought it all up. Right. Now it's on eBay for $6,000. It's insane.
What? So I've heard ridiculous. That from people on Facebook that were saying that of like, I just want to find some weights. Does anyone have any weights that I can borrow so I can not totally turn into the people on the back end of the movie WALL-E? Like, I don't want to just do that to happen to me. So
that's my fear too.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually cleaned out my whole garage and I have a weight set in there, bench press and can go all the way up to do squats and everything. Haven't used it in years, but cleaned out my garage so I have access to it now that, looks like I'll be locked in my house until about November. So I won't totally let myself go in the process of all of this.
Honestly, I think we should just change the name of the podcast to Sean Chandler Gyms Out.
That's a good idea.
I think that's,
there you go.
That's a good idea.
We should just go.
So speaking of working out, I know that you have spent some time in the gym and you've seen the movie Over the Top probably way more times than I have. I have one big important question to kick this off. So in his truck, he has his workout apparatus where he's extending his arm forward so he can work out prepping for the arm wrestling matches. But my understanding is this is a tricep exercise and a arm wrestling match is primarily using the bicep. Am I missing something here, or is this a mistake that Stallone put in this movie?
Absolutely. No, there's no mistakes in Over the Top. Okay, first of all, let's start there. Second of all, the guy only works out one arm. Let's keep that in mind. He's driving, the tricep pull downs on one side. He's not working his left arm ever, but they're both equally the same size. I don't know how. I have a conspiracy theory, but I won't mention it here. It's more predominant. It's a tricep exercise, but you know what? We're just going to let it go.
All right. We'll let that one go for now. I might bring it back up because it's bothering me so much. So we'll kick things off talking about the world of movie news. Obviously, everything's kind of shut down, and so there's not as much movie news as we normally have. But there's a couple of things that have kind of popped up. The first one is that apparently George Miller's still trying to get this Furiosa Mad Max spinoff going, and he's been doing casting calls over Skype. Hey, like we're talking over Skype right now. And so apparently Anya Taylor-Joy is in the running to play young Furiosa. And that's kind of one of the big new movie news stories from this weekend. John, any thoughts on both a Furiosa prequel? Do you want it from old man Miller? And likewise, does Anya Taylor-Joy feel like a reasonable younger version of Charlize Theron?
I do want it. Fury Road was one of my top 20 of all time right now. And old man Miller, man, he still has more vitality than 99% of most directors working in Hollywood. But you know, I think we already had Furiosa's story. We had it in Fury Road.
Yeah.
I don't think we need that prequel there. Can't Mad Max go somewhere else on a new journey and conquer that? You know, that's what I want to see. As far as having a prequel, I don't think it's needed. We have enough of her backstory. You know, we know some weird stuff went down within Morton Joe. She lost her arm in the process somewhere along the way. I'm good. That's fulfilling enough for me. As far as the casting choice, sure, she's fine. She's great. I loved her in Split. But yeah, I this isn't the story I think I want to see in the next installment of a Mad Max movie.
How about you, Griffin?
Yeah, if they're going to do like another Mad Max movie kind of set around these events or whatever, then yeah, I want to see it more of like a Max one going off and doing whatever. Because like I've always enjoyed how the Mad Max films are just anthology movies. It's just like he stumbles upon like a new civilization or whatever with each film. That being said, if George Miller is really passionate about a Furiosa prequel or a spinoff film, I think that I'm all for it, because it like to me, George Miller was the guy, like, I mean, he came up with all of this stuff. Like, he has to have a plan and a vision and something really interesting to do with it. Otherwise, I don't think he'd want to touch it. So like in terms of a prequel, like, is it necessary? No. And that's where I kind of agree with John. But I also think it could be interesting to kind of get like what life is like living in that sort of civilization, growing up, and kind of how it shapes her into who she is when we meet her in Fury Road. If they were going to do a spinoff, I'd obviously like to see it be like just Charlize Theron going off and doing something. It just past the events of Fury Road. But with a prequel, Anya Taylor-Joy, I love this casting personally, because she's one of my favorite up and coming actresses working today, and I don't think she gets enough credit. So I think she'll slip into this role perfectly, and it might be the big breakout role that she deserves.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Fury Road was phenomenal, still had all the energy, but all the aesthetics and bonuses of the 21st century. But I mean, it brought back all that chaotic energy that I loved about the Road Warrior growing up watching movies. But the idea of doing a prequel of Furiosa just seems weird. Maybe it's because I haven't seen the right movie with Anya Taylor-Joy, but everything I've seen her in, she's just kind of like walking around a little bit stoic, big-eyed, kind of at what's going on around her. I haven't seen the movie where she had the energy, that the vibe of Furiosa. And so I don't see it for that reason. I could be won over if I just saw the role that made that make sense to me. But I kind of agree with you guys. This isn't... Of all the potential Mad Max projects you could do right now, and George Miller is like 75. So it's not like he's going to crank out a lot more of these. It took him 30 years to do Fury Road. So it's like this might be the last thing we get of the options on the table. I mean, Tom Hardy, what a great follow-up to Mel Gibson. I mean, this is not the thing that would be high on my order of priorities of Mad Max projects would be Anya Taylor-Joy as Furiosa. Let's get her backstory. I'd much rather see a bunch of these other versions of what they could do with it, as you guys have said. What do you guys think about Beyond Thunderdome? I love all the other ones. I've never been a Thunderdome guy.
Oh, I love it, man. I love it. Two men enter, one man leaves. By the way, I have a prequel of Lord Humongous. Give me that. Explain to me why he's wearing a hockey mask, where he worked out in the post-apocalyptic wastelands, and why he has three strands of hair on top of his head. I want to know that. I love Beyond Thunderdome. I think here's the problem, okay? I have a category of movies where I'm like, it has an amazing first act, and the rest of the movie sucks. That's Beyond Thunderdome.
Yeah.
First act, you have Tina Turner. You have a great battle. You have Master Blaster. Oh, that's an amazing character. and then after that, it's just like Mel Gibson goes off into the desert and meets little kids. I don't want to watch this.
It's so weird. I agree with you. I do really like the first act of it. Like, and the whole concept of Thunderdome is awesome. It's iconic for a reason. But the rest of the movie, it's like some weird twisted version of Pan, and I'm like what? Like this, or I'm not Pan, Hook. Sorry, Hook.
Yeah. I know what you're going for.
I'm just like what are we doing here, George Miller? Like, what, this is just so unlike the past like two movies that you've given us. So, I've never been a fan personally.
As an odd side reference, I've been watching the show Brickmasters, and by watching it, I mean binge watched it with my kids until 2 a.m. We've never done that before. We stayed like 2 in the morning, and there, I think there have been two different times that there have been made very subtle Thunderdome jokes. It's Will Arnett is the host, and he keeps saying things like, as the song says, children, we don't need another hero. It's like, are you making these low-key Thunderdome references on Lego Masters? That's incredible. Or Brickmasters? That is incredible.
Yeah, I picked that up too. By the way, how'd you like the bridge building episode? Wasn't that intense?
Yeah, that was like, I couldn't believe they were doing that. They were like, here, put on these safety glasses. Like, that's 1,000 pounds. Like,
yeah,
that's
the safety glasses aren't going to help. Yeah.
I couldn't believe they're doing, well, and that as they started doing it, they didn't have the right weights. And so they had to like get sandbags to do it. That was incredible in and of itself. And then by the last person, they brought new weights in because they realized how unsafe what they were doing was. Like, I've never seen a show like this be so unprofessional that they didn't think through or test out how to do this. Or perhaps they did test it out, but then those people so exceeded whoever worked on it before. I'm just trying to, how did that happen? But yeah, that was amazing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I watched the first episode. I wasn't sure what I was going to feel. And then I just couldn't stop watching it.
No, it's addicting. They kind of wash over the building process to make it sort of that easy to digest, consumable reality TV.
Were you just talking that whole time?
Yeah, yeah.
You actually cut out until you're very late. Like, you started talking, and then as you said the last sentence, you cut back in right as you ended. But
it's cool. It's nothing important. We can skip it.
But as long as you said it, the audience was able to hear it. So
good. Yeah.
But yeah, it's what was interesting to me about as soon as they did the first challenge where they went, all right, you have 16 hours, and I'm used to on reality shows you have 1 hour, but like 16 hours, and one of the contestants is like a 75-year-old man. I was like, did he take a nap? Like, is that guy on his feet this whole time? How did that work? But, man, it was so much more addicting than I thought it would be. And, next week's on Star Wars, so very excited about that.
Yeah.
So, basically, I need to binge Brickmasters is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a reality show. It's like one of these contestant shows.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it. My six-year-old daughter, she goes, this is just like that cooking show that we watch. Like, yes, daughter, you're understanding. This is a genre. People competing, doing ridiculous things, and they're constantly trying to find new ridiculous things for people to compete at. Yes, that's what this is. All right, moving along to our other piece of movie news going on in the world. Yesterday, Sony booted their entire summer slate to 2021. So Morbius, Ghostbusters, Peter Rabbit. I know, Griffin, you were pumped about that one. All of it booted to 2021. And then Uncharted is pushed all the way to the end of 2021, kind of leaving them with no presence this year. John Flickinger, what do you think about Sony pushing everything to next year and kind of what exactly is going on? Do they think we're locked up or is there something else going on?
Yeah, I listen, when it comes to like Ghostbusters and Morbius, those are on the bottom, well, not on my bottom, but like not at the top of my most anticipated of 2020. Essentially, I've already come to the conclusion 2020's canceled.
Yeah.
Everything you wanted to see isn't happening, or at least anytime soon. So, you know, I've just taken comfort in my home media selection here. That's what keeps me going day to day. And maybe we'll start over in 2021.
Yeah, that's where I, people keep talking about, do they really think that we're going to be locked up until the month of July and August? Like, why are they pushing movies that, like, so predicting it, pushing it already? It's like, right, but they're not able to finish the movies. They can't promote the movies. Like, everybody's in lockdown. So the whole team's for post-production in lockdown, promo team in lockdown. And so, the trickle down of all of this is just going to keep shuffling dates. We said this last week. And I said it on Twitter, but like I think that almost every date that's out there for every movie is just going to reshuffle. I mean, a few might stay here and there. Bond's probably good to go. But everything else, this is just such a disruption that I think everything is kind of moving around. Griffin, how about you? You upset about Peter Rabbit too?
I really am, man. That film's been delayed more than New Mutants, I heard. So, that poor movie. the other one that was that I found interesting about that whole report was like Uncharted. So they're pushing that back from March to October. I don't even know if it's going to hit the October date of like 2021. Like, is that movie even going to happen still? I genuinely have no idea. I think that's the next New Mutants, sadly, for something that should be as simple and as amazing as Indiana Jones, basically gift wrapped to you. They're really making it more difficult than it needs to be. In terms of Morbius and Ghostbusters, the summer slate is just going to be wiped out. I think Tenet's going to move to Christmas. Top Gun, I don't even know where they're going to move that. I don't think it gets delayed a year though. But Tenet definitely moving to December and Christmas so that it cleans up. Dune gets pushed to 2021. Nolan gets a nice shot at award season. I think that's what we're looking at there. Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate. I don't know if you noticed this though, but like this Kevin Hart drama that's coming out in January got like pushed up to October, which I just thought was a really odd move, but I guess it makes sense because in October hopefully theaters should be reopened, but I have no idea.
Interesting. That's interesting. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, maybe there's no competition for the new Kevin Hart drama and that's what they're aiming for. It's a bizarre time. I just don't plan on any new movies the rest of the year. I feel like they're going to keep, like you said earlier, Wonder Woman's supposed to come out in what, August?
August is right? Where they push it out.
I don't think that's happening. I think that's almost too soon. But the other thing is, you know, not to be a downer, but let's just say the open theaters back up in August. They're open, right? Yeah. Go to the theater, everyone. Are you going to be the first person to go back to the theater in August? I don't think I'm taking that leap just yet.
Wait, there's got to be psychologically, we're being trained. Don't touch people. Don't go around people.
Yeah. Like,
and if you spend 2 months locked in your house afraid of people, man, that it's so interesting the consequences that'll have on society.
Right. I feel like there's going to have to be like a movie where like the studios sort of like test the waters with whether or not that's like Mulan, A Quiet Place 2 or Black Widow. Who knows? But like one of those three movies, I think, would be a great testing ground movie once like theaters reopen and people can go back to them. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe by August, like Wonder Woman will be fine, but I do think that's cautiously optimistic. I don't know.
Here's my question. Why is New Mutants not out on VOD yet?
Yeah.
just do
crazy.
It. Go for it.
That's I think the question that everyone is wondering, like what, how is this a thing? Every streaming service is looking for a great exclusive right now to make your big drop. Yeah. Everybody wants their Tiger King and Disney is just sitting there holding on to like a property's tied to the X-Men. It has Marvel in the title. You just drop that on Hulu or Disney Plus. It's so easy to make a big, gigantic ripple right now, a bigger ripple than they would make if they put it in theaters. Because you put it in theaters, New Mutants isn't a name brand enough property that most people are like, oh, I can't wait to shell out money for this comic I've never read before. But you put it on streaming, you just say Marvel, Mutants, X-Men in the promotion. People go, oh, all I have to do is click and they'll click. Man, I don't get it.
Yeah. It baffles my brain too. I don't know. But hey, we got Frozen 2 early on Disney Plus.
Especially when they drop Frozen 2 early, Onward's going to drop in just a few days. Yeah. All these big studio movies that weren't planned for that. And then the one that's been delayed for 2 years. And people, a year ago, people were like, just drop it on Hulu. Just drop it on Hulu. And they haven't dropped it. It's the obvious one, and they're not doing it. I don't understand.
They're waiting until society gets so desperate, then they demand it and they want it. I think that's what they're doing. Give it another month, and we'll see.
Yes.
Maybe like late April we'll get something. Who knows?
So one more thing on the movie Morbius. So Griffin, you brought this. It was an interesting one. Since we're all pumped about Morbius.
Yeah. Morbius. Dr. Michael Morbius.
It looks like, based off that trailer, Sony's leaning hard into trying to set up their own pocket Spider-Man universe with Vulture showing up, or almost certainly Vulture showing up at the end. And Venom's supposed to come out this fall. And they just pushed Morbius on the other side of Venom. And does that have implications? Does that guarantee Venom's going to be pushed out? Does that mean maybe their shared universe isn't as tied together as we're thinking? Any thoughts on connective link to Venom 2? I guess, John, you already said you don't think that anything's going to come out this year, but any thoughts on that?
I think, well, even if they do attempt Sony, if they attempt to connect a universe, it still won't be connected no matter what. So I, either way, I don't care. I do want to see Venom, the sequel. It does get me excited with the director, Andy Serkis. But I thought the first one was bad. Morbius, to me, the trailer sort of looks like a movie that would have come out in like 2001.
Yeah.
It doesn't look all that enticing. And really, I was hoping that if you're going to build up a universe, I was hoping that at some point, maybe Disney and Sony can work together again and maybe have Morbius and Blade go one-on-one with each other, which would be kind of a cool showdown. But I don't know. Honestly, it looks bad. I don't care. Those are my final thoughts.
Griffin, how about you? Where are you on this one?
I don't think Morbius getting delayed is going to affect Venom too much in terms of, well, okay, that is, you know, if they're able to finish Venom in time, that's right. The big question, right? Like, it's not so much if Morbius ties into Venom, it's if it's, you know, is Venom going to be finished? Is post-production going to be finished or whatever? I think that, you know, kind of similar to, well, I guess Venom didn't really hint at a larger universe that much, but like, I think Morbius will probably have like the interaction with Michael Keaton's The Vulture, and that'll be like the big thing that indicates there's like a crossover universe, or maybe like those Venom will be on TV or something like that.
Yeah.
I think it'll be a subtle enough thing to where it's not going to matter story-wise which film comes out first. I could be completely wrong, but like it is curious that they didn't move Venom when they were doing all these date shifts, but they did move Morbius. That leads me to believe that the story wise, the film is fine. I do want to bring something else up, though, because on that same report, there was an untitled Sony Marvel movie that I think was supposed to come out in, I don't know if it was supposed to come out in 2021, but it got whenever it was supposed to come out, it got shifted to like 2022. And I was curious what you guys were thinking that film might be.
I'm going to put my headphones on now. That way the audio sounds better. you should have reminded me.
That's a good point. I thought about it as putting mine on, and then I forgot to remind you.
I told you I haven't slept in a day. Come on now.
It's very true. So the question was, which Sony Marvel movie do I think is the one that was pushed back?
The untitled one, yeah.
I don't know. I don't tend to go too much into that level of speculation on some of those projects because they're getting so weird about some of it that I just don't know. And especially when, you know, last fall, mom and pop were arguing, split up. And so we didn't know if like what they were going to try and do with Tom Holland's Spider-Man. So I'm very confused as to why Sony's being so aggressive with their Marvel stuff while at the same time don't even know if they're still connected to this or, you know, very tense relationship with Disney. So I don't really have any guesses. John, do you have any guesses as to what there's apparently another Sony and Marvel one?
Absolutely not. I have none. You would hope that they're building to maybe some form of the Sinister Six.
Yeah.
That would make logical sense if you're going to have a whole bunch of, films based on villains. But who knows, though? Once again, it's Sony. Sometimes they just throw things at the wall and they usually don't stick. So that's why I just don't care, because they've let me down so many times. If Venom 2 comes out and it's amazing, then I'm excited. I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. But that's if it ever does come out. Hopefully it does.
And so kind of moving along, but somewhat still related. So all these movies from summer have been delayed. Besides Morbius, that we're all our souls are crushed about that one. Which movie are you most disappointed that it's been delayed? John, how about you?
I think we might all say the same thing here. Does it start with a T? Everyone blink twice if it does. No? Okay, just me. I'm going to go with Tenet, Nolan's Tenet. That's what I was most disappointed by. That was like my most anticipated movie of the summer. And then probably right after that, maybe Wonder Woman 84, that 80s vibe, that throwback, that got me excited to see a sequel. And I was like, how does, what is his name? Steve Trevors, right?
Steve Trevor, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, how does he come back? How is he alive? Right. I don't know. But yeah, I was disappointed by both of those. And the thing about Tenet is there's a lot of movies I'm willing to give into and watch. If they would release them on VOD, I'll give in and I'll right. watch them. But Tenet was that one theater mm-hmm. experience. I was like, I will drive 2 hours to the nearest IMAX to watch that film. And that's what really disappoints me most.
So Griffin's favorite franchise of all time is Bond. So that's the one that's most soul crushing to him. But I would guess his number two would be Tenet. My number two would be Tenet. I have a mild amount of hope that maybe we'll get Tenet in July. I don't think it'll happen, but mild amount of hope. Yeah, for me, Tenet's the one that, you know, there's no way I would watch that on VOD. That's where some people have asked me about some of these ones, like how much would you pay to watch Tenet on VOD tomorrow? Like nothing. Like, you'd have to pay me to want to watch it for the first time on my home system. Like that's one of the things that's great about Nolan is that he makes actual films that make you want to go to the cinema, which like for the experience and these amazing images that aren't just big CGI armies battling each other. That's part of the magic. Plus these complex stories, interesting characters. And so I don't want to see that for the first time on my home system. Like, you know, one of the great film experiences of my life was seeing The Dark Knight Rises on a true IMAX opening day with a packed group of people that were just excited. One of my buddies actually dressed up as Bane, had a mask that he homemade and everything. My buddy Andy, that's sometimes on my channel, did that. And, you know, he makes movies that you want to see on the big screen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, I agree. I would throw out Top Gun 2. I am really excited for that film. I think it looks fantastic, especially the way it's being shot. And that's another one where I wouldn't want to watch that anywhere other than an IMAX screen because I mean, that's just the way Tom Cruise makes movies, like what he does and like how he collaborates with the directors. They make cinematic experiences different from what Nolan does, but still like. You want to see Top Gun on the big screen. Those like dogfights or those cockpit shots just look incredible. So that would be, you know, outside of Bond and Tenet, that would be the one I'm most disappointed about.
Speaking of Tom Cruise and amazing cinematic experiences, that same exact IMAX theater is where I saw Ghost Protocol, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol the first time. And that Dubai Tower sequence in IMAX is the best thing I've ever seen in the theater. Speaking of mind-blowing, just like immersive, like I am terrified I'm going to fall out of my seat, out of a tower. It was absolutely incredible. Okay.
Yeah, it almost gives you a vertigo when you watch it.
And that's at home. Yeah. But man, it was insane. I just could, it was so good. It's a magic experience seeing that one on an IMAX theater. Okay, so theaters are shut down. Here's a question for you. What was the last movie you saw in the theater before it shut down?
Onward. Onward was the last movie I saw in the theater. That's crazy, right? Onward. I liked Onward. I didn't love it. A lot of people hate it, which is baffling to me. But really enjoyed it. What did you guys think about Onward? Did you?
Yeah, I loved it. I think it's just going to be one of those Pixar films that like will get a cult following and will like it'll be like revered as one of the best Pixar films by like a group of people. I don't know. I really found it to be mature and tell a very personal story. So I had a great time with it.
I enjoyed it. It was a lower on my list of Pixar films. I thought, you know, some of the humor, of course, Tom Holland, Chris Pratt. Great chemistry, a lot of fun, and you know, there definitely had the Pixar heart to it, but I just thought the story frustrated me with the way that it was structured. I don't normally watch a movie thinking like, I don't understand how time works here. Like, why is it taking so long to drive across town? And then how did they get back so fast on a boat? There's stuff like that that was like, it was just too much sticking in my brain, and I didn't get to watch it with my kids. And a lot of times when I watch movies like that with my kids, it just makes for a more magic experience because it becomes one of their favorite movies. So I'm wondering, like when I saw Frozen 2, that movie always have a special place in my heart because I took my daughter out of school. I didn't tell her in advance. I just showed up, like pulled her from class, jumped, put her in the car and drove her to the theater. And she's like, what are we doing? I was like, we're going to the movie. She goes, why are you taking me out of school? Because we're seeing Frozen 2. And so it's just a really cool experience. So nice. Onward, I was in its own way kind of cool because I took my daughter's, or excuse me, my sister's kids, my nieces or nephews and niece to it too. That was pretty cool too, but not the same thing as taking your own kid out of school. But anyway, Onward, I was a little bit mixed on it. Griffin, yeah. What was the last movie you saw in the theater?
I think it was The Way Back. And it wasn't even a real proper theater going experience. It was just a press screening. So, yeah, but I mean, you know, that is probably my second favorite film of the year. So if that was the last movie I saw in theaters all year, I can't really complain.
Yeah, you know, that's one movie I did not get a chance to see, and something inside I was like, I will watch that at home one day, but I do not want to go to the theater to see it. It just, like, I'm all about the underdog story and the guy having a story arc, becoming a recovering alcoholic and finding himself by coaching this basketball team. But I was like, I've seen that before, and it's called Hoosiers, and I'll watch this later. And you said that's your second favorite movie of the year?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, I would say it's probably Ben Affleck's best performance just ever in general.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. And it's you're right. You have kind of seen the film before, but it's told through, I don't know. It's like super grounded, really heavy and emotional. Kind of reminded me of Manchester by the Sea in some ways, just sort of that little dreary, you know, character piece. But it's still great.
And the sports is on the back burner. Like the front and center is Affleck and his kind of journey. So it has a very different vibe to it than Hoosiers, which is very much it's about the team coming together. That's like the secondary plot to this movie. And so I think definitely when it comes to the basketball side, it is Hoosiers. It's the thing you've seen before. It's the Affleck stuff that if you can buy into that and take that as the main thing of the movie, that's what elevates it. But on that point, kind of sidebar right here. Have you seen the movie Warrior? And what do you think about the movie Warrior?
Oh, dude, I'm all about. I was just thinking about Warrior, and I was thinking, is it formatted the same way as Warrior is, with the brothers' dramatic plot being the main focus and the UFC stuff kind of being the secondary thing? Dude, Warrior is the reason I started going to the gym and working out traps every day, because I didn't want a neck anymore after looking at Tom Hardy. Yeah. And I love Nick Nolte in that movie. Oh, Tommy, it's a real nice thing what you did for that boy in that tank. I love it.
That's ever since I saw that movie, that's been my go-to recommendation film. And so then I had it maybe my top movie of the last decade. I don't remember where exactly it was on my list that I did in January. And so every single day since I put that video out, someone messages me saying, I'm so glad you recommended Warrior. I absolutely loved it. And that's I just love the movie Warrior. Just ironically, actually, Griffin and I interviewed the composer for the movie last week, which is pretty cool because he was able to tell some of these behind the scenes stories about like the song that plays over the last fight in the movie. Yeah. There's this whole backstory about where this version of the song came from. It was pretty cool. But it's from the same director, Gavin O'Connor. So that's why I specifically asked about it, because he did Warrior. The Way Back instantly became one of my most anticipated movies for this year. Anyway, back to our question at hand. What was the last movie you saw in the theater before it shut down? For me, it was Bloodshot. I got to see the Vin Diesel classic.
Man.
Double feature.
Sour taste in your mouth.
double feature, The Hunt in the morning, and then Bloodshot that evening, and then theaters shut down for the year 2020, and the best picture of the year is not going to go to Bloodshot. But I didn't mind. I mean, I can take a movie like that. It's just, I'm pretty easy on action movies that remind me of stuff that I grew up kind of watching. And that's kind of the way that I took Bloodshot. So I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. And so I'm way too easy on it. But I didn't hate it the way a lot of other people did. But yeah, it's as generic as you imagine.
Good schlock though, right?
Right. It's sort of, exactly.
It takes you back to that time in like the late 90s, early 2000s, where they just had a really bad run of overuse of CG in action movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in the case of this one, it's also you're watching it. If you watch the trailer immediately, you go, oh, Guy Pearce. And it's kind of Memento-esque. And then you watch the movie and you go, oh, it's very Memento-esque. And then it's also his character has reminiscent of his same role in Iron Man 3. So there's all these things about it remind you of something else.
He turns into a liquid fire guy?
Yes, that's
what? I haven't seen Bloodshot.
No, that's not what happens.
I take pride in not seeing it, so yeah.
No, but it's the minus fire breathing guy, there's definitely some reminiscent stuff in his character to kind of what happens in Iron Man 3. Okay, speaking of theaters being shut down, we're stuck at home. What do you guys recommend some people binge watch on TV or movies?
I think,
I really hope we all say the same thing. It has to be Tiger King.
Tiger King, man. Carol Baskin did it.
She did. She murdered her damn husband. I actually saw some, I read yesterday that they like reopened the case on her husband. Yes. Like they're going to go back and try and figure out whether or not she did it or not. And I think she's done. She's done.
So you guys are saying I need to watch this thing called Tiger King?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, so I'm always late on these things.
Well, hey, listen, right after you and the family watch Brickmasters or Lego Masters, keep the family on the couch, turn on some Tiger King. I'm sure the kids will love it. Joe Exotic will blow them away, man. It's mind-boggling. You couldn't write fiction better than this. You couldn't do it if you tried.
Yeah.
Just give it two episodes and you'll be addicted.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's where I'm always late on these Netflix things, so I still haven't seen Bird Box. So as soon as it figures out it's like that trendy thing, I'm just too far behind. This one, since we're all in lockdown and I don't have anything to watch, like for the last 2 years, I'm always behind because I'm prepping for my ranking videos and I just have to rewatch all these movies. I don't have to do any of that for like the rest of the year. So I can actually be on the cultural wave watching TV shows with people. So maybe tonight that's what I'll do.
I have a question for you. Your ranking videos and that whole aspect of YouTube, not to go off the rails too much, though, but don't you feel like kind of like an obligation has been lifted off of your shoulders sometimes? That's how I feel sometimes when there's like a mediocre movie coming out that Friday. And I'm like, oh, I have to go see it and stay up all night and review it. Now I don't have to do that. Yeah. Now I can just make the videos I want to make. And it feels so liberating.
And 100%. That's where I've been. Even kind of beyond this, kind of thinking, I've been the ranking guy for a couple of years now. And that's that people have known me is that I've been doing it for about 3 years. I started in May 2017 is where I was like, every week I'm going to do these rankings, and then got real serious about it when that actually was like, oh, this is going to be a career path for me, which was about 2 years ago. And so like I keep these lists of movies that I have to watch 3 months out, sometimes 6 months out. Last year, I ranked every Marvel movie, so it took me 6 months to watch all of them while trying to watch everything else. I mean, that is a weight on your shoulders. And so right now, I had a list that was through May of like 80 movies I had to watch for all these different projects. So every time the family was going to watch something, I would literally give them a list and say, which one do you want to watch? And so it's like, it's not just a me thing, it's a whole family thing. Okay. And people all the time are like, hey, why don't you rank the DreamWorks movies? Because there's 40 of them. Why don't you watch this break the Scorsese movies? Because there's like 20 of them and they're all 4 hours long. That's 80 hours for one video. Like and they're like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. And like, well, right. And so as soon as all this kind of went down, all that cleared out. And I've had these ideas I've had written down for years, because I'm an idea person. So I wrote them down, and there's always something more urgent that I'm working on. There's always that new franchise that I know will be a safe bet. And so then these ones that are a little bit experiments, I've had to push them off. And so then right now I'm just like, I'm working on these weird things. I'm like pitching movies, which is kind of fun for me. I've got these ideas about canceled movies that I'm working on. And so, for me, it's been very liberating to feel like I can do what I want. And it's also scary because the safe bets are all gone. There's no safe bets and there's no uniting stuff. But at the same time, yeah, absolutely. To give you a long answer to your question. John, are you there? So anyway, if you guys are listening, actually there was about a 10-minute gap between me going on a big, gigantic rant about how I feel free right now and getting to new stuff. And right now, because we lost John there for a little bit because the internet is not very reliable right now, that everyone is on the internet all day long streaming Tiger King, I guess.
Yeah.
And we lost John Flickinger for a little bit in there. But the short answer, John, for your question is absolutely. Absolutely, I feel like a weight has been like lifted off my shoulders. Got it. Just as a creative person, it's nice. It's kind of refreshing to just have to kind of go out of my comfort zone and try new things.
Exactly. Yeah, it's sorry for the dial-up speeds, everyone. Yeah, I agree with you. That's how I feel. I'm kind of like excited that for the next so many months, I don't have to go review that mediocre movie. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of great movies along the way, but there's a lot of obligatory ones, you can say that. And now I can do like some series ideas mm-hmm. I've had on the back burner for like 3 years. So mm-hmm. yeah, I feel good. I feel good now.
Well, especially like for me with the rankings where sometimes, all right, I need to do the ranking after this because I haven't talked about this franchise before. So sometimes it turns into, I have to like watch 8 mediocre movies just so I can rank the whole thing. And yeah. some of that I don't mind. Some of it, it's like discovering new things. Yeah. And other times it's like, okay, like I've had a few where I tried to rank them and I got to like movie 3 in the franchise. Is like, if I don't want to be the guy trashing stuff, that's just not who I am. And that's not who would want the video. You know, so I started doing the Leprechaun movies and I was like, who's going to click on like, it's fans of the series are going to click on this.
Oh boy.
And I would just be like trashing all of them. It was like, I'm going to stop. I'm not going to torture myself for 5 more movies doing this. So, I bailed on that particular idea. But, it's interesting to kind of like have. Actually, here's another question. Hey, when was the last time you went this long without going to the theater? Like, I don't know if in my adult life I don't know. I have no clue when the last time I went a month without going to the theater was.
Yeah, that's a good question. Honestly, I can remember back maybe in like 2000 and maybe like around 2003 or 4. I remember there was like kind of a dead zone of movies and I was in high school around the time. So that's really the last time I remember skipping out on the theater for this long of a time period. But other than that, no, this is the first time for me. How about you guys?
Yeah, I can't remember another time where I went this long without going to the theater, you know, press or like regular screen, like whatever. It's the longest I've gone without seeing a movie in the public.
I should probably change my answer. I'm almost positive whenever I did have kids, whenever first kids came around, that we had big, gigantic gaps for a while there. That's what was interesting when baby number 3 came around. I was like in my streak with my YouTube channel and it's like baby was born. We're in the hospital. And then the next day, the Predator came out. And so I'd done this whole lead up series, you know, Predator's one of my favorite movies. Shane Black's writing and directing. How could anything go wrong? So I left my newborn baby and my wife that just had a baby to go watch the Predator at the theater. And that was not the best movie to make that life choice for. I didn't know.
No,
I didn't
absolutely
know.
Absolutely not.
Not at all. That was one movie that could have maybe waited. But hey, that's a great story.
It did. It worked out.
Yeah.
So then I shared.
How disappointed
that.
Were you when you watched it, though? I mean,
and watching it,
I know,
being
that's
like
the real question.
What am I watching right now? How did this happen? Like what? In the movie, there's a point in time where someone goes, remember way back at Halloween? And it's like, that was 2 hours ago. What are you talking about? Remember Halloween is 2 hours ago. And they left the line of dialogue in the movie. Yeah. A bizarre film.
Yeah. The whole subplot with the little kid. It just, I don't even want to touch on it, but crazy.
Yeah. But yeah. How does Shane Black come in and do a Predator movie? And then it turns into this disaster. And there's all these articles about gigantic subplots that were pulled out and, movie making.
Good.
It's amazing. So yeah. I shared that story a couple times on my channel before, and I had a guy join in the comment section. He goes, what kind of low-T beta male soy boy leaves his wife in the hospital after having kids? Your low levels of testosterone are making me sick. It's like, that is a comment right there.
That's so a great one.
I was about to go flame the guy, and I clicked on his icon, and the guy's like jacked bodybuilder guy, and it's like, I'll let this one go. He can call me low-key beta male soy boy if he wants. He's earned it in the gym.
I'm sure it's really his icon,
yes,
too.
Yes, it's definitely him. Yeah. So I can trust it. It's on the internet. All right, let's kind of last little section in here. Just kind of want to ask you, John, just some questions. Some of these are the basic ones. You probably told some of these stories a little bit before, but I think there's a little bit different when people that are kind of in the same space kind of hear the story and can interact a little bit back. But so where did your love for movies start?
I've loved movies ever since I was a stupid little kid. I remember my most cherished movie theater memories where I really picked up on movies being more than just movies to me. My dad and my mom were divorced, and I'd go stay with my dad every weekend. And what we would do is go see rated R movies. So True Lies, Last Action Hero, you know, and some terrible movies like Blank Check, the Disney movie, which I secretly sort of love. I think that was when I really started looking at movies differently, and they were like this fun experience that it became like the immersiveness and the theater experience, hanging out with my dad, watching rated R movies as a little kid, watching Jamie Lee Curtis stripping on a pole. those are the movies that defined me as a young boy. And I think that's where it developed.
That's some of mine are, I guess I'm like 5 years older than you, but have some similar kind of experiences. One of mine was seeing a double feature at a drive-in movie theater. First movie, The Lion King. Second movie was True Lies. So go from pure Tigers royalty over to Jamie Lee Curtis and, discovering manhood and all those sorts of things, watching True Lies. And so, that exact era of action movies so much defined my taste in movies along the way. But I guess along some of those kind of same exact direction, what led you then to post your first video on YouTube? Because you're one of those trailblazers. Like me and Griffin, we watched your stuff for 5 years and we went, hey, we could do that too. But you're one of those people from before there were all these people already established in the space. So what led you to think, I'll use this YouTube thing to talk about movies?
The same thing you just said. Exactly. I was like, there's other people doing it. I can do that too. I just remember just being a sad, lonely dude living in my mom's basement in my early 20s. And I was watching at the time, I think before I started YouTube, I had like 5 YouTube subscriptions. To me, YouTube was just like I didn't understand that there was more channels and lifestyle channels out there. I was just like, oh, there's just dudes going around stores. I'd go out and I'd see guys on the internet buying DVDs. And I was like, that's what I'm doing with my life. Why not record it? So I bought a really crappy flip cam from Amazon. It was one of those cameras that had like 3 pixels on it. It was terrible. And I started making videos and I was just recording what I was doing every other day. I drive around buying movies and talk about them with my friends, except my friends didn't want to be in the videos because they were ashamed of them and me. And so I did them solo. And then it just sort of slowly progressed from there.
Yeah, I remember when I first started posting videos, especially in my case, I was in my mid-30s. So my friends are like, what are you doing, man? Like, why are you posting videos of yourself talking about? And no one was too mean. No one was too judgmental. They all have known I'm like this nerdy, weird guy that talked about movies too much. But at the same time, they're like, dude, what are you doing? And then as soon as it was like crossed like a certain point in time, everyone's like, oh, that's crazy, man. That's so cool that you're doing. It's like, right. But you're pretty weird about it right at first there.
Yeah, my friends, I remember some of my earlier, I hid my channel for 2 years. I hid it from my family, my friends. And once my friends got a hold of it, they like endlessly made fun of me. And then you cut to like 5 years later and I'm like being invited to go interview Sean Bean and do this. And I'm just like, you remember that time you laughed at me?
Right.
Like, and my one friend worked in a cubicle. I'm like, yeah. So, it was the best choice ever made buying that really crappy flip cam off Amazon back in 2010. So I'm glad I did.
So kind of following up on what you just said, what was the moment where you realized, oh, this isn't just a hobby. This is like really happening. This is really working. Was there like a specific moment or iconic thing that happened or a specific video that took off?
Man, I wish there was. I remember the golden number starting out on YouTube was like, I want a video that hits 100,000 views. That's what I want. And then I made a video. I think I was talking about like The Dark Knight Rises, maybe I don't remember. I made 800 videos on it, but I think that hit 100,000 videos, and I was like, "That's cool. That's an obtainable number. You can do that." Okay, now I understand. And then I remember around maybe 2013, I was scraping by just enough from YouTube because I made no money doing YouTube for maybe the first 2 years, 2.5 years. And then once I applied for the partnership for like the 19th time, I finally got it. And I remember, wow, you can earn money making YouTube videos. So around 2013, I remember I got one check that was it wasn't as much as I wanted it to be. But I was like, you know what? I don't need to work my crappy job anymore. I just quit it. And somehow magically things worked out. And those checks got bigger and bigger as I kept making videos.
Very cool. Very cool. So you've been, what year did you post your first video?
October 2010.
Okay. So you're right at about that 10 year mark of doing this.
it sounds depressing.
It's very cool in another sense, but so if you look back on 10 years of being in the movie fandom space on YouTube, is there really any interesting trends you've kind of noticed in the way the fandom works or how movie YouTube has kind of been perceived by people?
Yeah, it's crazy. It really is. So starting out, I was all about like collecting home media, Blu-rays. And then I thought to myself, why do I have to buy things to talk about movies? So that's when I started doing movie reviews. And I was like, I'll make this sort of the backbone of my channel. And then I noticed from there, my most successful year for subscribers, where I blew up the most, was probably like 2015, 2016. And I was talking about movie news and speculation and things coming out, which to me is just fun. That's what we talk about now. That's what you talk about with your friends. And that was before everyone was doing it, right? There wasn't 9,000 videos about the first leaked set photo from Venom 2, right? And then I remember around this time, there was the reaction video trend coming out, which is sort of fading off a little bit right now. But I remember that was cool. But a lot of people just, you could tell they were making these videos that weren't genuine. And it was just like, I'm going to overreact to a mediocre trailer. And that sort of ruined it a little bit for me and got stale really quick. So that's the last big trend I remember. Right now, I couldn't even tell you which I'm so out of touch, to be honest with you. You could probably inform me a little bit better what the newest trend is. I mean, ranking videos seems like a good trend, right?
So, ranking videos, I think we're maybe on the downside of that one, that hill. And then
you ranked everything.
Yeah, I'm running out of the interesting things to rank. So now working on Paranormal Activity. We started watching last night. Ending explained videos.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
And then trailer reactions have kind of fizzled. And so that it's turned into everything you missed in this trailer, 50 Easter eggs. And so those sorts of ones.
55 things that you missed that you never knew that you shouldn't know, but you want to know. Yeah.
And so there's always kind of these different shifts and everything. And, you know, like for me, I think about it from the perspective of, I just want to what's the stuff I'm interested in talking about? What package can let me do that? So like I do trailer reactions, not because I have no interest in a trailer reaction itself. I don't watch anyone's trailer reactions. I just want to talk about the trailer. And if that's the package that people are using, then cool. I'll do you can watch me if you want to watch me watch a trailer. It seems weird to me, but cool, whatever. And then I talk about it at the end. But some people have messaged me like, dude, you should start doing reactions to the pitch meeting videos and you should react to like what?
Yeah.
you're losing what I'm interested in.
Yeah, I've just never understood the whole reaction trend. Like it just doesn't what is interesting about me watching something that you could just watch yourself. Like I understand people wanting to see people talk about it. So like doing like, I don't know, just like videos on given trailers or given whatever, but just like, and then it like keeps going down a hole. And then you get people reacting to, like you said, like the pitch meeting videos or like full episodes of a show. And I'm like, well, why do you need to watch the reaction to that? Can't you just watch someone like review a whole episode of a show? Like, it's weird.
I get it for specific things. So, case in point, I saw Endgame before it came out. And so when I watched it opening night with my wife, my buddy Andy, five of my friends around me, when they moved into that finale and Captain America is about to yield Mjolnir, I'm doing this. Like, I'm looking over at my friends. I just want to see how they react. And then when that portal thing happens and you hear on your left, I'm turning like this and I'm just watching my friends to see how they react. But it's for a specific thing that's interesting. It's not generically, did you laugh at that joke? Like, that's just, I don't understand that. But if someone wants to watch
it. It's weird.
Well, the other thing I noticed, though, is like people, if you do if you call it a reaction video and you don't sit there and stare at something for 3 minutes and like raise your eyebrows a lot, people will get mad at you. But but what I'd like to do is I do the reaction video, but it's secretly just a trailer review.
Right,
I just start talking about it, which is a reaction to what I saw. not a facial expression reaction, but yeah, they actually got angry at you if you don't just stare at something for 2 minutes. And I'm like, that's what you wanted me to do, because that's easy. I can do that all day, but I couldn't give in to it. So.
And that's what's fun. Like for me, when I'm trying to do the thing, I'm trying to like think expressively. And so like I move my eyebrows, and then so the comment section is like, dude, you're just sitting there moving your eyebrows for 2 minutes. And then if I'm like, I'll do the next one, I'll be like, let me talk over it. And so then I'll talk over it and be like, dude, why are you talking over it? Giving your thoughts, just do that at the end. Then I started doing like little blurbs at the bottom of the screen where I wrote my thoughts. And then they're like, dude, why are you putting the words? You're just going to say that later on. It's like, you people make up your mind. What do you want me to do?
You don't know how to watch a trailer. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, aside from putting on an act and never pleasing anyone, it's just, oh shit, I forget where I was going to go with that. I had a really interesting thought that I wanted to bring up. Damn it, I lost it. All right. Well, fuck me. All right. oh, never mind. I knew where I was going to go with this.
Okay,
the people who are watching those videos, like they're not people who are going to subscribe to your channel. They're just, they just come and go. It's just an exchange. And then like, you can't like actually build like a foundation and a community off of that. So you see a lot of like smaller YouTubers just like doing reaction videos because they think it's like the trend and stuff like that. But it's, they're missing the whole point of like building that community and like making your channel about something. And that's something that I think like reaction videos, they just don't have. Like, yeah, there are like the Tyrone Magnuses of the world who built their channels solely on reaction videos, but like he's been doing it even before it was a trend. So yeah, it's like, you know, nothing about that kind of, it's empty content, it's soulless. So it's like, no one's gonna stay and subscribe to your channel just to see you watch the latest trailer for like I don't know Morbius or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say one more trend that, speaking of reactions, you guys remember the one trend of certain reaction girls reacting to viral videos?
Yeah.
And it was like the thumbnail was the same thing every time. So, yeah, I remember that. But, yeah, I just like to have a little more substance in my videos. Right. That's my thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of to me of, that's what matters. Like, I just want to talk about movies and have something to say about it. So, you know, I'm the ranking guy. And so, I used to even say it in all my introductions, like, numbers next to titles isn't what matters. It's the why. It's what I'm saying. So there'd be people like, why is this one behind this one? It's like, well, did you watch the video? Like, I talked about it for 45 seconds. I gave my reasons. Yeah. Like, did you just skip through to look at titles next numbers? Why would you care about that? Why would you, the whole point is the exchange of ideas and understanding why someone's, I did these office ranking videos a couple years back, and the YouTube algorithm every once in a while just like throws them out to thousands of people. And so over the last week, since we've been in quarantine, these office videos are just getting all these new viewers and views. And these people just keep being like, why did you put this person and not this person? It's like, well, the reason I stated in the video,
that's
the whole video is it's 25 minutes long. I talked about everybody for a minute, or I talked about every season for 2 minutes. Like, I don't understand.
I feel your pain. I feel your pain deep down inside. It's like a movie review. You can give a movie, I don't know, a B+, and you explain every single reason. You explain every single negative. People still get angry. Why'd you give it a B+? It blows my mind sometimes. And I'm just like, who cares about the grade? The grade. Right. I almost wanted to stop doing grades at one point, just because what's the point, right? Just listen to what I said. That's the review.
Right.
But it's crazy. There's always that small percent of people who get hung up on things like that. And then the majority do want to hear your thoughts. And those are the people I want to subscribe to my channel. And those are the people I'm making videos for. So I leave it at that.
Yeah. I think the funniest one is when I'll do like end of the year lists or something like that,
rank
something differently.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, dude, you gave The Way Back a B+, but you gave this one a B, but in your rank at final end of year, you have this one on top. Like, why did you do that? Like, you said that this one was better. Like,
just say I lied.
So it was all lies.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing is like, you know, a film on rewatch, your grade can change.
It changes,
right? Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, if you're human, your opinion does change, you know, things change.
Yeah, and certain movies are really good, at that first impression.
Yeah.
And they don't hold up really well. Other ones, you have to process it for a while to even kind of decide what you feel about it. All, movies are so different. That's what makes a review after one viewing in and of itself a limiting thing to do, because not all movies are designed for that. And I've only one or two times been like, I can't score this yet. I'm going to do a review in a couple days. I'll talk about it again. I think I've done that a couple of times where I just couldn't process my feelings. I think Last Jedi was one of the ones where I was like, I have to watch it a second time. Yeah. And then here we are 2 years later, and I'm still like, I still haven't decided yet what I feel on this one. Or the number of people that like came out of, I think even Griffin, you came out of Rise of Skywalker, like, I'm torn on this, but I think I had fun with it. And 2 days later, you watched it again, and you're like, this sucked.
It was like one of those things where you get swept up in the initial experience of it because it's Star Wars, but then like the more you think about it, you're like, oh no, this is a bad movie, this is really bad.
To go back to the first movie news topic, you went back, Fury Road, first time I saw it, I didn't love it. I didn't know what it was that was missing for me. And then I saw it again. And then I got addicted to watching it on Blu-ray, and it became like one of my top 20 of all time. So sometimes it works out, you know, in a positive way.
You lied is what I just heard.
I did.
So real quick, as we're kind of on the subject of like the oddities of YouTube and movie review and stuff, is there a question or type of question that people ask you that you just wish that they'd kind of stop asking?
John, do a Blu-ray collection video. I don't know how many times I can hold up the same movies in front of my face on a camera. I mean, I don't know why you can't just go back and watch one of the 15 other ones I did. It's the same thing, minus four or five different movies. Maybe that. Off the top of my head, I can't really come up with anything. Maybe that's it. Yeah. So, I don't know.
That's where I always wonder that, because I know – now that I'm established enough, I've been doing this a little bit long enough to have these questions. That it's like, I feel like every single day I'm getting a DM from someone that's asking me the same version of this different question. For me, it's can you rank all the Stephen King movies? Can you rank the Scorsese? Can you rank? And it's always the same kind of this long answer of, or a TV show. Hey, can you just watch this TV show and rank it? Just watch this TV show. That's like 200 hours of TV watching or something. Like, yeah, just watch all the, can you just rank all the seasons of Smallville? There's 10 seasons of Smallville and they're all 20 episodes long. And so then that's for me the one where it's like, I totally appreciate where they're coming from, that they want my opinion, but they just don't stop to think the work that goes into it or stuff like that. So it's always interesting to me, like, what, I know everyone that has an audience has that. So what is that thing for them? Final last few questions on here before we let you go. I get asked also every single day about people that want to start a movie channel. And I know my advice for them. What are your kind of quick advice that you pass along to anybody that wants to start a movie channel, especially now that we're in quarantine, so everyone has time to hook up their webcam and start talking movies? What's your advice?
Oh, man, without being too generic, you know, obviously have a good camera, good lighting, blah, blah, blah. Right. You have to have a personality, too. You know, if you don't have anything interesting to say, then don't, why make the video? Why would someone watch your video compared to the 800 other reviews of Bloodshot out there, right? So bring something unique to it. And if you don't quite have that yet, develop it. And you can do that. You know, just starting out on YouTube, you're not going to be the best ever. You're not going to be the greatest. But, you know, at least bring something different. Don't use people as inspiration, but don't copy anyone's style, because we already have that version of someone on YouTube that you can watch. And if you're going to attempt to be successful like them, you're not going to catch up to them doing that. So I would say just bring something unique and be yourself. And, you know, I think that's the best advice I can give.
Yeah, that's the one that I see so many people that I totally get taking inspiration. But when it's just such a direct one-to-one, and it's the thumbnail design, it's the titles, it's the type of content, and it's like, man, you're just when I first started seeing it, for me, I was, you know, it's of course flattering when I started seeing all these people with their face pointing to the left, four posters with a shadow, and it's like, that's like my exact thumbnail design that took me about a year to figure out how to do it, and you just did it, and it's kind of flattering. I'm not offended or anything like that, and you know, I've taken inspiration for things. My set looks, you know, way too much like Chris Stuckman's, and I get it. But at the same time, like when it's every single detail, it's like, come on, you got to find that new thing because you're competing against me or competing against Flickinger or Stuckman or Johns, whoever it is that you're copying, you're competing against them and you'll never win. You'll never be better at Flickinger, Stuckman, Johns, Chandler than they are at being themselves. So you got to
listen, Sean, don't worry. People say I'm copying Stuckman's set, even though I did mine first. It's okay. You'll never win.
I met him at Fantastic Fest last year and got to talk with him a little bit. And just in case, I asked him, like, hey, man, my set looks way... it was definitely inspired. And I looked at yours, too, as well. So I hope you're not deeply offended that I looked at your... idea of being in a quarter with shelves behind you.
It's copyrighted. I'm the only person, me and Stuckman are the only two people on YouTube who can sit in a corner. So, okay. And you sit in a circle.
That's what he told me. He's like, I'm deeply offended. And he just threw his drink in my face and walked off because I'm in a corner with a blue wall.
As he should have, yes.
Right. And I still have people messaging me, you're ripping him off. I was like, yeah, kind of, maybe. He doesn't care. Why do you? Like, who cares? Why are you paying so much attention to the aesthetics? Anyway, final two questions on here. Since I'm the list guy, got to get a couple of lists from you. Yeah. So what are, like, your top five action movies?
I hate you.
or some of the ones that are interesting to recommend to people.
You know, gosh, okay, actually, I can give you maybe my top five because I've made this video before, so I will reiterate myself. I think the quintessential is T2,
yep.
Judgment Day. I think that movie still holds up. I think the action sequences, practical, are still fast-paced, thrilling to watch. They're better than 99% of the stuff that we get today without an overabundance of CG. And plus, you have Arnold and you have Edward Furlong before he got all strung out of meth. It's a phenomenal movie, and I love it. And then you have Point Break. Some people love it. Some people hate it. I love it. I think it's honestly underrated for what it really does. And then third, gosh, I think I did a top five movies of all time. Now I just lost out on three. God, pitch me something here. My brain's going blank.
Die Hard, Predator, Aliens,
the Mad Max
series. John Wick.
Gosh. Why can I not remember my top five? Gosh, man.
True Lies.
Oh, I'm
Commando.
Sorry. I'm back. Predator. Predator's in the top five. And then honestly, when it comes to like the Die Hard movies, I actually think Die Hard with a Vengeance, I prefer it over the first
Interesting.
One.
Interesting.
Weird. Oh, yeah. Unpopular opinion. But it's got Sam L. Jackson and the buddy cop vibe. Gosh, I'm trying to... I wish I would have read your questions ahead of time. I would have had a better answer for this. What's that, like four?
I need one more good recommendation.
You know what? I'll go with a modern day movie and I'll leave it with Fury Road since that's sort of the theme of this video.
Okay. And then follow up question. What's your favorite comedy from 1947? Do you ever get people ask you questions like that? That's like so specific. Like what?
It is. That is an odd question. Yeah. Make up some Charlie Chaplin movie or something.
Real final question. What are a few movies that you like to introduce people to? Like I mentioned, for me, I love to introduce people to Warrior. What are some of those kind of movies that are less well known that you just love to introduce people to?
Dude, I know it's a joke, but like I like to have people watch Over the Top and then I like to watch them watch it. So that's sort of like my live action version of a reaction video without having a camera. And then people are like, oh, I thought it'd be a lot more terrible than it was. They're like, OK, I get it. That and maybe Nightcrawler and American Psycho. Those are both great films. Right. And I think Nightcrawler's a little bit more easy to digest than American Psycho.
Yeah.
So if someone who really loves films or dramas, I like to introduce them to a Nightcrawler.
Oh, that's with both of those movies. Amazing cast. With American Psycho, I always forget all the people that are in it. Besides, obviously, Christian Bale, you remember him. But then we're like, wait, Reese Witherspoon is in this? And it doesn't feel like a movie that she would be in. And you're like, orgies and prostitutes and obviously people being brutally murdered. And
chainsaws and naked dudes running down hallways.
And Reese Witherspoon.
Morbius himself.
Morbius is in there.
And then he gets murdered. So good. Yeah, I love American Psycho. But yeah, those are just a few movies I think everyone needs to watch at least once in their life. And I've watched them too many times.
Griffin, did you have any questions for one final question for John?
Do I have any questions for John?
As we close out.
Geez, give us your at-home workout routine.
That's good.
The last 3 weeks, it's been watching Shark Tank and Lego Masters, man. Honestly, I don't know what it's going to be. I have some dumbbells. I have a bench. I have like some resistance bands. So I'm gonna go with that and some old-fashioned push-ups.
Hell yeah. There you go. Well, you know, if you ever get bored, you can start doing fitness videos, I guess.
I'll just watch Warrior and it'll give me all the motivation I need. Right, that's, I'll just do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
of course, the question everyone is wondering, what is your max bench press?
I think it was 325, but that was when I looked like a big bloated baked potato meathead.
Very, very nice. Yeah. All
actually,
right,
you know, I do... Oh. I do actually have a really a genuine question for you. Yeah. What was it? So like you've always been known as the movie guy, but like you also people always associate you with like fitness and everything like that. Did you ever think about starting like a fitness part of your channel? I know you've done some of them on like your personal channel, but like, you know, how did you get into like fitness? But then like, did you ever think about, you know, doing videos like that?
Yeah, I'll give you the quickest rundown I can for it. So, back in like 2011, I was just getting scrawny, malnourished looking. I looked unhealthy. I just hadn't been active in like 6 years since high school, and I was disgusted by myself looking in the mirror. I look like Christian Bale in the movie
Machinist.
The Machinist. Oh, yeah, yeah. And I was like, and I just had some downtime in my hand, so I just started going to the gym, and I instantly just felt better, and I looked how I felt, and. So then I just got addicted to it, probably a little bit too much in the gym. And that's how I sort of started out. Yeah. So back in like 2015, when I was in the gym every day, I was like, I should be recording this. And I actually had an idea for a channel name. And I think I already made it, so you can't steal it. But it was called Flick Flex. And So I was going to do like a fun vlogging channel. But you know, the thing is, like, the gym to me was so cathartic, and like it was like my outlet. That I just like, I don't want to bring a camera in here. I just, this is like where I like to relax. I was just always more passionate, I guess, about movies when it comes to YouTube and the fitness. I kind of just left to my personal life. So,
yeah. Okay. No, that's just interesting though. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just close out on this one little bizarre anecdote. About 2 years ago, someone on Twitter posted a tweet where they said, basically, this new Sean Chandler guy is, he's like the child of John Campia and John Flickinger. And you responded to the tweet, "Who the hell is Sean Chandler?" I am Sean Chandler. So the things that happen on Twitter, the amazing little moments. And we lost him once again. That's a great little pause right there.
That's a great little freeze frame right there.
This is crazy.
There you are.
That was good. I hope you got a little laughing in there about your tweet, man.
Yeah, it froze right on you in the middle of this big, gigantic grin. And so,
it was like a beautiful 80s freeze frame.
Yes, it was a wonderful moment that if
you
we had to
twinkle
like,
in my eye.
Yeah. Yeah, if we had to fade out, put the twinkle for that shot, it would be a perfect, beautiful final note. So real quick. Where can we find you on the internet? I'm sure most all of my subscribers are familiar with you and following you, but just in case, hopefully we can send some people your way. And do you have anything exciting coming up on your channel?
Who the hell is Sean Chandler? I have my 3 month late top 10 movies of 2019. But you know what? I'm glad I delayed it. I'm glad I waited because now there's nothing to talk about. So yeah, this makes perfect sense. You can find me at the Flick Pick on Twitter and YouTube and wherever you want to go look for me at.
And all that information will be down below in the description. John, thank you so much for coming on the channel. And Odd, a thank you to Ryan O'Toole. He's the one that asked a question on one of John's live streams about a month ago that actually led to this moment. So I'll put Ryan O'Toole's information down below as well. Griffin, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can, as always, head on over to the FilmSpeak channel for all the shenanigans I got going over there. And then you can find me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
And everyone, as always, if you're listening on your favorite podcasting place, please be sure to leave a positive review and a star rating. It helps out the channel as we're in these early phases, trying to get some momentum. And if you're watching on the YouTube, leave a comment on whatever topic at hand that you were most interested in. Thank you guys so much for listening and watching, and keep talking movies too much.